Good afternoon, everyone. For those of you who've been in here in this room for the past hour, we just had a very hot and lively debate on the future of work with the Labour Ministry, Labour Minister Andrea Nahles. And in this session, we're going to talk about the future of work as well, but more from a, let's say, comparative perspective. So we are going to look at what's going on in the US, what's going on in Germany, and trying to answer the question, how can Germany actually be a leader in the digital age? And when you look at this debate in Germany, you basically find two strands of debate. Like on the one side, you find those saying that Uber and all these platforms, they are basically evil, and we have to hinder them to disseminate even further within our economy. And then on the other side, you have this startup bubble talking about IPOs and why Europe is not producing the world's next Facebook or Google. But I think that basically the more important question we have to ask is, how do we basically implement these new business models that are developing into our setup of a social market economy? And this is the debate we are going to have now. We're going to have three speakers. We're going to have Stephen Hill, we're going to have Anna Alex, and we are going to have Anke Hassel. And I would like to invite them on the stage. So Stephen, Anke, and Anna, would you please come to the stage? Cool. Just some brief words of introduction. Just take any seat. Take any seat. Okay, so we have Stephen. Stephen just published a book in English. It's called Die Start-up-Illusion, Wie die Internetökonomie unseren Sozialstaat ruiniert. The Startup Illusion, How the Internet Economy is Ruining Our Welfare State. Stephen was a Holzbrinck Fellow at the American Academy here in Berlin last year. He's a political scientist by training. He's now a political journalist, an advisor. He's a columnist for Das Handelsblatt, for Die Zeit. And he's a very interesting person to talk to when you're interested in what's actually going on in Silicon Valley, what's going on in Germany, and how do the two relate to each other, and what can two sides, so to say, learn from each other. Then we have Anke Hassel. Anke Hassel is a professor of public policy at the Hertie School of Governance here in Germany, and she's the academic director of VSE, which is an independent think tank funded by the Hans Böckler Stiftung. And we have Anna Alex. She's the founder and CEO of Outfittery. Outfittery is a personal shopping platform for men, right? She was part of the Rocket Internet ecosystem, so to say. And my idea is that we're going to do it like this. We're going to have a very brief introduction by Stephen laying out what his book, is basically about. And then we're going to have a response by Anke and by Anna, and then I come up with a couple of comments and a couple of questions from my side, and then I would like to open it up to the floor, and we're going to have a debate, all of us together. So the question is, how can Germany be a leader in the digital age? And Stephen, how can Germany be a leader?
Okay, can you hear me all right? We've been given specific instructions on how to hold the microphone, so... How can Germany be a digital leader? Well, you know, I was, the book came out of being here in Germany for about half of the year last year, and talking to many, many people. And I kept hearing, you know, where are the German Facebooks, the German Apples and Googles? You know, Germany needs to be more innovative. Germany needs to be more like Silicon Valley. And as someone who lives in Silicon Valley, my reaction was kind of, wow, are you sure about that? And I realized that not everybody really knows what the fullness of Silicon Valley is, the pros and cons. There's certainly some good things. There are a lot of downsides as well. So, for example, 7 out of 10 startups in Silicon Valley fail. 9 out of 10 never make any profit. There's just a lot of money. It's basically a casino where a lot of money is being thrown around to find that Facebook or that Uber or whatever. Well, actually, Uber is as profitable. Uber lost $3 billion last year. trying to find that rare company that actually makes it through. And can every place, can Germany really afford to have such an imprecise policy of promoting business development where 7 out of 10 are failing? I'm not sure that's the best use. So I go into that in my book quite a lot, where I talk about, well, what does Germany have that would really build on its strengths? And one of the things that Germany has is quite remarkable, and I think is underappreciated sometimes because, you know, as Germans, just like Americans, we don't appreciate what we have that is good, is the Mittelstand. The Mittelstand, it actually creates 60% of the jobs, and by Mittelstand, I hope you can understand my terrible German, Mittelstand. It's the small and medium enterprises in Germany. So there's millions of them. They create 60% of the jobs. They 56% of the economic output, a huge amount of the export industry of Germany, and this trade surplus is from the Mittelstand. And so, you know, but yet the Mittelstand is challenged because this digital era is coming, and how do they upgrade? How do they innovate? Well, is there a way to create a hybrid between the startup world and the Mittelstand? The cultures are actually two quite different in certain ways, but I believe that's possible. And in my book, I go into some of what I think needs, how that could occur. And part of that is because, you know, can Germany have become like Silicon Valley? No, it really cannot. And Germany really needs to find its own path, its own way in that regard. It can have a vibrant startup community. Berlin has surpassed London and Paris and Stockholm and others as the leading startup city in Europe. And yet, that's just the beginning. There's not enough middle stage funding. There's a lot of startup funding, including from the government, but not a lot of middle stage funding for these startups. But in addition, the reason why 7 out of 10 Silicon Valley startups fail is because at a certain point you realize that there's just no customers that care enough about this product or service being produced at the price point you have to produce it to be profitable. And you see that same thing in Germany. A lot of companies failing because a lack of good ideas. It's hard to find that big idea that scales and becomes big and becomes important. So it creating this hybridization between the startup world and the Mittelstand, what I call is, you'll appreciate this, Anna, Rocket Mittelstand. How to create a hybrid between something like Rocket Internet, which is good at execution, good at scaling, not so good at innovation. Right? Rocket Internet creates copycats of Amazon and then scales them in different places around the world and then sells it back to Amazon and makes their money in 100 days and they move on. This is not exactly innovation, new product, new service, but it is execution, it is scaling. That's what the Mittelstand is good at as well. So I think this kind of merger could be good. But that's not what I wanted to talk to you about. What I wanted to talk about, the other thing that was surprising in looking at Germany versus the United States, because I'd hear, again, a lot of people say to me, oh yeah, the things like digital economy, Uber, Airbnb, yeah, that's happening here a little bit, but it's not happening as much as in the United States. And the more I looked into that, I actually found not only is it not true, but that government statisticians and the way you track these things is actually not, doesn't appear to be as accurate as you think, and that it's actually happening more than you realize. I'll say at the outset, if there's one main message in my book, it's that Germany needs to figure out and could even play a leadership role in the world in figuring out how do you make part-time jobs into good jobs. That's really the goal that we have now, because if you look at the trend in labor markets, whether it's the United States, Europe, Germany, what we see is in the 2008-2009 collapse and the 2010 Eurozone crisis, we lost a lot of the permanent full-time jobs. In fact, Germany has fewer permanent full-time jobs as a percentage of the number of jobs in Germany today than it had in 2000. Germany has been better than some of the other countries in Europe and the United States in creating some middle-wage jobs, but still not nearly enough. The hit against the jobs has come in the middle-wage jobs. But even within Germany, those middle-wage jobs are more part-time temp jobs, solo, self-employed, subcontracting, Werkvertrag, if you can understand my German, types of jobs. This is the trend in the labor markets. And yet, the policies seem to be designed around permanent full-time jobs, the Vice book and other things that are being put out there. And so for more and more workers, they are dealing with, you know, they don't have enough work. Now, some workers like the flexibility, but unfortunately, they also are going to need security. I mean, it's kind of interesting. When you're young, you're 25, 26, the flexibility seems great. You have enough money to for your rent. You have enough, to go to the coffee shop. You have enough to have some beers at night with your mates, all these sorts of things. But as you get into your 30s and you get older, you want more income. You want more security, stability. I mean, some people have tried to say that, the millennials, as they're called, or some new post-capitalist generation that are, you know, they're cool with having flexibility and this type of digital economy and, going from job to job. Well, you know, you could describe every young generation in the post-World War II era that way. The reality is, as you get older, you want more stability, more security, more income. But the jobs that are going to provide that are disappearing. That's the challenge. And what they're being replaced with are these precarious jobs, part-time, temp, contract jobs, solo self-employed. So the question to me is, how do you take those jobs and turn them into good jobs? Because, you know, the post-World War II social contract, whether it's in the United States, Germany, wherever, is predicated around a type of worker who has a single employer and had, got their wage, their hours, their job security, and their social security benefits through that employer. That's what's disappearing. And I don't see it coming back. You know, we haven't even really talked about the impact of automation and robots and all these sorts of things and how that's coming faster. That's going to have even greater impact. So how do you make it so that, you know, more and more workers are working for multiple employers today, not one employer? And yet, by doing that, they don't have the Social Security and some of the labor protections that we used to have with the old social contract. How do we make it possible for them to have both flexibility and security? That's the challenge. So what I've proposed in this book is the creation of what I call a portable universal safety net, which is what we call it here in the United States, or Social Security, whatever you want to call it, welfare system. And what that means is that every worker would have assigned to her or him an individual security account. And every business that hires that worker would pay something into this account, a certain amount above the wage, that would be prorated to the number of hours that that worker works for that business. So let's say a worker works 10 hours a week for a certain business. That business would pay about a quarter of what a full-time 40-hour-a-week worker would get from a regularly employed full-time job. And if that worker had two employers that gave them each 10 hours a week, they would get 25% of that need from each one of them. If they got 5 hours, they would get a prorated amount. And the amount isn't that great. You know, it works out to about 2 to 3 euros more per hour. And that would allow that worker to have health care. You have the employer's half of health care. They still have to pay their half. The employer's half of pension, injured worker compensation. A lot of the workers working in these flexible, precarious freelance jobs don't have any kind of access to injured worker compensation, all these sorts of things. So it would basically allow these workers to work for multiple businesses and still preserve the security to go with the flexibility. And here's the other thing, is right now, you know, for businesses, let's say I'm in business, and you're in business, and you're in business, we're all competing against each other. And you're hiring freelancers and contractors, and I'm hiring regularly employed full-time workers, you're saving about 20 to 25% on your labor costs compared to me. That puts pressure on me to do what you're doing. It's what I call the steroids of the economy. I mean, it's like, you know, the Tour de France. As more and more bicyclists are taking steroids and doing the juice, then those who aren't doing it feel the pressure. Well, I guess I have to do it as well to compete. Well, by making it so that every employer is going to have to pay for that Social Security, regardless of how that worker works, it takes away that incentive to hire the part-timer to begin with. The employer might figure, well, instead of hiring two or three part-timers, I'll just hire one person full-time because I can build a better relationship because it's not going to save me anything in labor costs. So these are the types of things I go into in my book. I'm just going to wrap up by saying that I think that, you know, I mean, the United States, let's face it, we elected Donald Trump, right?
So in many ways, the leadership on these sorts of issues, even though the United States is suffering from them as much, and in some cases worse, it's not going to come from the United States. It's going to come from places like Germany. And there's reason for Germany to do it because, you know, when you look at the Germany actually has about 50% more part-time and temp workers as a percentage of your labor force than we have in the United States. You have 2 to 3 times more workers making minimum wage than we have here in the United States. So it's not just a question is that, you know, that's neoliberal America and you know, Germany isn't like that, as I kept hearing more and more. In fact, Germany is more like this than you realize, and you're not counting it accurately for reasons I go into in my book, having to do with the household survey and all these sorts of things that I can go into during Q&A if there's interest in that kind of nitty-gritty detail. But just know that you're not counting these things. One study found that there's actually 90% more of these so-called independent workers in Germany than what official government sources say. 90% more. So we're entering this new world of labor, digital economy, and we really have to figure out the way forward to preserve, you know, have good part-time jobs as well as good full-time jobs to create both flexibility as well as security. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Anke. In Stephen's book, there are like two major arguments. One is that innovativeness is not really Germany's problem. There are like a couple of things to work on, but that's basically doable. And then the second argument is that the gig economy is already here in Germany. We just don't see it in numbers. And perhaps as a social scientist, you can comment on this, if this is like actually the case. But because the gig economy is already here and Germany is becoming a freelance nation and we have to adapt our system of social security and welfare and labor market regulation to this kind of new reality. We have to, let's say, softly update our German model. So what do you have to say?
So as you have already discovered, this is a very complex book because it ranges from the Silicon Valley and the way the gig economy works to the German low-wage economy. And there's not an obvious connection. And I think we should make this obvious connection because the way it's set up, this book, and it's a really interesting book, the way it's set up is to say that Silicon Valley and the gig economy produces a low-wage economy in Silicon Valley and California, and that makes it unsustainable. So we do see a lot of social problems. We see low wages, homelessness. We see all kinds of social problems in California as a result of the gig economy, and that is a result because you have a winner-takes-all economy. You have some people, very few people, who get very rich, who drive up prices, and you have a lot of people who work for very low wages and who cannot afford the rent. That is the argument. And then he moves on to comparing that to Germany, and he sees the German economy works very differently, and that is where the Mittelstand comes in. It says there's a lot of innovation in the Mittelstand, and the Mittelstand is the backbone of the German economy. But at the same time, we have the same social phenomena. If we look at it socially, if we compare labor markets, California to Germany, if we compare the low-wage economy, social problems, we see that we have similar figures and similar numbers when it comes to social problems. And then there's the question, why is that? If we don't have the gig economy, why do we have a similar degree of low wages and a low-wage economy? So that is what I take from the book. And that makes it interesting because, you know, you do have two very different economies, but you have similarities when it comes to low wages. For me, when I look at it, and I share a lot of the analysis which is made there, I share a lot of the assumptions, I wouldn't say that the gig economy has arrived to Germany in a very similar way. I think a very different gig economy, a part of the gig economy, has arrived to Germany. And the other part, which is the reason for low wages and social problems, have nothing to do with the gig economy. The reason why Germany has a lot of social problems and a big low-wage sector, which is, you know, above average in the EU and which is, to some extent, bigger than in the United States, is nothing to do with technology and it's nothing to do with the gig economy, but it is to do with policies and policies which were enacted about 15 years ago when the labor market was deregulated, when a lot of different ways of hiring people were introduced into the economy. But that has very little to do with the gig economy and technology. One aspect I would like to make now on this relationship is really that I would like to see the causality the other way around, because as Stephen says, you know, look at the gig economy and look at the many problems it creates. I would say look at the low-wage economy and look at the social problems we have in the economy and look at all the problems that will create for us coping with technology and for us coping with digitalization. I would say that the main problem which we have is that we now have already a polarized labor market, and this polarization, which has to do with wages but also with skills, makes it increasingly difficult for us to cope with digitalization. And if we want to benefit from it, we have to make sure that we have to stop polarization of skills, because we need well-trained people and we need well-paid people who can deal with technology.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Anna, Stephen already addressed the rocket way to run companies. Is there also a rocket way to envision society? Because I'm just wondering, right? You're a founder of an internet company, right? Of a company delivering clothing to young men ordering this clothing via basically apps on their smartphones. So it's not necessarily obvious where's the link to how do you organize a welfare state. So do you think about these issues? Do you think there is some kind of responsibility of how you're running these business models, of how the startup ecosystem in Germany is developing with regard to where do we stand as a society when it comes to labor and social issues? Okay. So what is your role on this panel? That's my question.
Oh, that's a good question to me. I mean, you invited me on this panel, and I see myself actually being more the representative of the startup world and
exactly,
on the business side of things here. Maybe a few things on this. I mean, I think rocket in the US is seen very negatively in a sense of just producing copycats. And I mean, I'm not working for Rocket anymore. I used to work there for 2 years, and I need to say that it was a very good school for me to go through this, actually, and learning the execution side of things. But there was as well something that I was actually missing, and that's why I then decided to found my own company, not within the Rocket ecosystem, but to do it completely on my own, together with my co-founder. And the thing that was missing was a certain, like, culture, working culture, that I want to see in my own company. And, I mean, by now, Outfittery is 5 years old. We have 300 employees. And, of course, there is as well a big responsibility that I feel and that I have for my team and for my business, and that I take very, very serious. So I do think you can learn a lot from working in, like, different environments, and I took a lot from my working experience from Rocket. But I think for me the way was to really combine this with my own view on the world and my own view on culture and working responsibility that I have for my team.
Yeah, but do you think the way to go forward, Stephen is proposing, so kind of to combine the best of two worlds, right? So the German Mittelstand, when it comes to work practices, what you've just been talking about, with the innovativeness, dynamism of the startup world, right? Do you think there's a way to combine the two, and is this the way to go forward for Germany?
I mean, I from my perspective must say I have high respect in front of the Mittelstand and in front of someone like who's running a business that might be 100 years old and, like, founded by the grandfathers and so on and so forth. And we're now with Outfittery at a size that we get frequently asked, are you Mittelstand now? And every time I get this question, I say, oh my God, no. We are not. And the reason why... in 100 years, we might be. So. but the reason why I don't see us as a Mittelstand and I don't want to be Mittelstand is that I think it's a question of mindset, actually, that is dividing the startups from the Mittelstand. And the Mittelstand is thinking about how to preserve the things that has been founded in the past by their grandfathers, versus the mindset of the startup is how to disrupt, how to innovate, and how to like drastically think different than our fathers and forefathers. Yeah. So and this is for me the big difference. It's not in number of employees, which is defining the Mittelstand versus startup or some. It's a question of mindset. And to be honest, if we can really combine two mindsets within one company, I'm skeptical.
Yeah. Anke, you've been talking about low quality jobs and high quality jobs. And companies like Anas, for example, or when you talk to Laura Esnola of care.com, right? Like the big company who's also in Germany providing also kind of caring services at home. She's basically arguing that we are going to produce the high quality jobs of the future, right? And you as a labor market and social policy expert, do you think there's anything to this argument?
What, that Anna produces high-wage
jobs? That these kind of companies are going to produce the high-quality jobs of the future?
Yes, why not? Yeah. I mean, there's no. I don't think there's any reason why a startup company or, you know, a tech company shouldn't produce high-quality jobs. I would expect them to produce high-quality jobs. I don't think that is really
because
the issue.
The title of Stephen's book is that startups are generally ruining the welfare state.
Well, the startups are, you know, okay, so now we're talking about radical innovation. I think that is the aspect. If you have radical innovation and if you have business models of companies that produce an alternative to existing businesses and can drive out other businesses out, from the market, then obviously you eradicate a number of jobs. So if Uber comes to Germany and is successful here, it will have an impact on taxi and transport businesses. Mm. And then you get a radical innovation because you have a completely new business model which you use to have transport services. And there you have, on the one hand, you create jobs, but also you destruct jobs. But whether these new jobs are better than the old jobs or worse, that it depends entirely on the line of business you're in. And it depends entirely on what you employ people for. I don't know, what your staff does, but I can imagine it is not just, low quality or unskilled labor, and it is rather high quality because you have to, I actually do not know what your staff does, so I really don't know. But there's no assumption, there's no pre-assumption that startups lead to bad or worse jobs.
Yeah, so you would call for a differentiation in the debate, right? To stop kind of the blunt, startup bashing.
Yeah.
Stephen.
Let me just explain a little bit about how this title came about, which I didn't pick, the publisher did. But here's what some of the danger is. There's a company based in Silicon Valley called Upwork. They have 250 regular employees, and they use technology to oversee 10 million freelancers all over the world. And those freelancers are doing things like computer programmers, software designers, translators, graphic designers. There are architects, there are engineers. I mean, there's a huge number of occupations and industries on this platform looking for work. And, it's basically an online labor auction. You can go there to hire someone, and they bid on the job, and you can see the bids going lower and lower. You'll see a German worker on there saying, I'd like to make 60 euros an hour for this job. You can see a U.S. worker saying, I'd like to make $70 an hour for this job. And then there's workers from Thailand, India, Philippines saying, I'll take 2 euros an hour for this job. And those workers are highly trained. They have access to technology. And companies like Outfittery and whoever it is can hire them wherever they are. And they produce the product, they upload it to Dropbox, they email it on the internet, however they want to deliver the product. It used to be to outsource jobs, you had to move a plant to another country, and that was expensive. So it was a barrier to doing that. Now you can outsource jobs just by having a website. You can, and that's what's happening. 10 million freelancers on this platform of Upwork. Now I asked some of the German researchers and government officials and others, how many German workers are on the platform Upwork? They said, I don't know. We don't know. We have no idea. We're not counting them. And it took me about 20 minutes to go on the Upwork website, use some filters, and find out there's about 18,800 German workers on this one platform. It took me 20 minutes. So the fact that German researchers don't know that and didn't do that 20-minute job shows you that they don't think it's important. There's no emphasis on it, and so they just didn't bother. That's just one platform, and there are dozens of these platforms now. How many of these workers are there? Because if they're being hired by
an employer in the United States or in India or Russia or wherever, you can be sure that that employer is not telling the German government, hey, I hired this German and they made 5,000 euros last year working for me. They're not telling the German government about this. The worker probably isn't either, all right? And so the government is not really counting these workers. I mean, it's not that they don't know how. They're just literally not even trying. And yet there is some organizations that are trying. Those are labor unions, IG Metall, Verde. They're trying to count these workers. And some of the studies that have been done estimate that there's about 1 million to 2 million of these sorts of click workers, as they're called, in Germany. So just using conservative numbers, if there is, you know, 1.5 million of these workers, that's about 4 billion euros in income that's not being tracked. That's not being taxed for income purposes. That's about 670 million euros that's not going into the healthcare fund, just using conservative numbers. So this is serious money. And this is just, you know, we're only at the beginning of what these technologies are going to do, how these companies are going to be hiring workers to replace permanent full-time workers. We're already seeing those trends in the labor markets. Fewer permanent full-time jobs today than there were in 2000. More part-time, temporary work, solo self-employed, all these sorts of things. So if enough workers are working this way and you're not getting the revenue, that's going to undermine the taxes you need for healthcare, for transportation, for education, for all the social needs that exist here in Germany. And the fact that they're not being counted, and as I mentioned, even for one of the ways they are counting, other studies, because the way the German system works, and the U.S. system too, is use a household survey. Someone literally calls up people and says, you know, how do you work? Do you have one job, two jobs? But they only stop at two jobs. They don't ask, do you have third and fourth jobs? And they don't ask very much about the second job. They're still using the assumption of permanent full-time jobs, the old post-World War II model, to get that information about the first job. But there's a lot of evidence that more workers are working this way, and they don't self-report accurately. They don't necessarily tell you that they have a third and fourth job unless you really get that information out of them. And so other independent researchers that have been tracking Germany and U.S. and other places are finding that the number of independent workers that are working separate from this permanent full-time core employment is, in Germany, 90% higher than what official government sources say. So, you know, there's a numbers game going on here. Do we have the methodology to count the ways that people are working? Anke, do you think we do? I'm curious.
On the methodology, you know, there is more research on counting people who work on platform, on click workers, crowd workers. And as you mentioned, there are, efforts to recruit these workers, to give them a platform, to unionize them, etc. I don't think that that people underestimate the phenomenon. I really don't think so. I think there's an awareness of that, and there's monitoring going on, you know, how do they develop, what is the impact, you know, how many people are there. And there are also policy, you know, proposal already. If you read the Weißbuch by the government, they deal with these issues, and they deal with, you know, how should we insure freelancers, what kind of pension insurance should they have, what kind of access to health insurance, etc. I don't think that, you know, that there's a serious underestimation of the problem going on. I think it is, you know, it has come to Germany later than the US, so this is a recent phenomenon, and people now start looking into it, and, you know, research is more recent than in other places, but it's not that, you know, people go, you know, are blind to the phenomenon here. I wouldn't say that at all. The question, as you said, is, you know, how important do we say this phenomenon is? If we have, you know, 2 million freelance workers who are self-employed and do not have any employees themselves, so not business people, but freelancers. So, and these 2 million people, some of them might be insured through their spouses, through their families, have other ways of insurance, etc. So some of them really are out in the open. You know, they are underinsured. We know they will, you know, probably will not make a living in the long run. They will probably end up as, you know, poor freelancers. They are now poor, and they, you know, in 10 years' time, if they're still freelance, they will still be freelancers, and there will be old age poverty coming from that. And then the question is, you know, maybe it's 1 million people, yeah? So do we need to reform our insurance system to take care of these 1 million people? I would say yes, Yeah, and there's a discussion on about this. There is a discussion, how can we integrate people into pension insurance? Of course we could, but we also know that if they were integrated as everyone else, the insurance contributions would be so high that it would deter people to declare their work. You know, we know that. We drive people out of declaring their work because health insurance is incredibly expensive and pension insurance is incredibly expensive. So we need to lower contributions. How can we do that? Can we ask the government to step in? Can we ask the government to make contributions as they do? Or businesses, can we tax businesses accordingly? There's a discussion among platforms. There are platform companies now saying we want to be taxed because we want to give insurances for our freelancers, but at the moment we cannot do so because if we do so, you know, our competitors will drive us out of the market because they, you know, they don't pay insurances. So I think this is an ongoing policy debate, but I wouldn't be as pessimistic and as negative as you that we will not find the answers for that.
Well, let's leave.
I don't think I'm negative. I think that are pessimistic. I think you will, but the trends are going in a different direction. I mean, if you look at the Vice book, it's predicated for the most part on full-time jobs, and yet there are fewer permanent full-time jobs in Germany now than there was in 2000. So
let's leave the technical argument here. I would like to open up to two rounds of questions. Please do ask questions. Please be brief. Please feel free to address people on the stage. And let's do questions in rounds of three. So two rounds of three questions, right? So please raise your hands. There are people with microphones in the middle and on the left side.
Raise your hands if you have any questions and then come to me.
Okay.
Or to my colleague.
To your left.
So please go there.
Please do approach the people holding the microphone, okay?
Okay. So thank you very much for the interesting speech. I have a question because I agree with Ms. Hassel and I disagree with Mr. Hill a bit because you described a lot of major economic trends in Germany, and I would fully agree to say that when we look at the technical labor market, then we see those trends strengthening, so more and more freelancers. But the way you described it gave me the impression that you described the major economic trends on the labor market in Germany, and therefore I actually fully have to disagree, because we have a lot of part-time jobs in Germany, but that is mainly a female problem. So the structures we have in Germany lead to the consequence that 60% of the people working in part-time are women and not men. And we also have at the moment 1.1 million jobs who cannot be filled. So we have a huge demand for people working. And we also have a law in Germany that tries to prohibit freelance workers, because you said that that if you would have a company, you would then just employ freelance people, so it would be cheaper for you, because yeah, then you would save costs, wage costs, which is not true, because we have a law that prohibits you to have so-called Scheinselbstständigkeit. So these are all things that are very, that makes the view on how Germany and the labor market works very differently from the point of view you described. So my question is, first, was your description only based on the technical labor market or the digital labor market? And second of all, we talked a lot about labor policy, but I think in order to strengthen the digital economy, their labor policy is only just one way, and there are many other keys we need to start. So what are your ideas on different topics than labor market policy?
Okay, let's take a second question.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Cyrus. One thing I realized is that in services, which is about 2/3 of our, labor, community or labor shift, where digitalization is starting, some trends like scan and go, like you go into a supermarket and then you scan on your own your shop items, and then you go to an electronic cashier and he's making all the buyout or shopping for you, and there's only one person who's guiding you, or two persons or three persons, and the other 24 who were at the beginning there, they are gone. Perhaps we're inside of the shop in the supermarket, but normally they wouldn't be there after a while. So what is happening with these people?
Okay. Who wants to start? Steven?
Just quickly, the first question, the part that stuck out to me was about women in the labor force. And certainly, you're right. Women and young people are more impacted by these trends. And I was looking at the economy as a whole, not just the digital economy. The numbers are from the German economy as a whole. I don't see that the fact that it's happening to women should be any reason to somehow, it seemed to be you were suggesting that it's not as big a deal because it's happening to women, and maybe that wasn't your intention, but that's what I was hearing. And in fact, to me, what you said was more of an argument for why Germany should have something like a portable safety net so that all these women who are working in these part-time jobs, maybe some of them have access to health care through their husband, but is that really the basis you want to continue, that women with part-time jobs only get access to this safety net and support system through their husband? I think that what you want to have is something like, here's the funny part where I get to try out my German, Künstler Sozialkasse.
Künstler Sozialkasse.
Thank you, what he said. For freelancers, for people who are journalists and artists and musicians, you have that, and also there's a certain classification of home workers that have access to the employers paying a certain amount into for these workers to have a social security. So I'm saying we should have a KSK for all. That's what Germany should look into, is KSK for all, to make sure that no worker gets put into a precarious situation, whatever their situation is.
Okay.
I completely agree on the KSK, but I think the problem is when you talk about full-time and part-time employment, and when you say part-time employment is the problem. We had, for a very long time, we had a very strong focus. You know, Germany is a conservative country, and in particular, the role of women on the labor market is often shaped by very conservative views. But we used to have a system where it was clear that, you know, you had the full-time working man and the part-time working woman, and this was for a very long time, you know, our conservative system. So we do not really see that as a great role model. We want people to have jobs that they can live off these jobs. But the point where I would disagree is to say, you know, and therefore we regard part-time jobs as problematic. Part-time jobs are problematic if you have them for the whole length of your life, and if they do not produce the income that you can live off these jobs, yeah. But to say that everyone needs to work full time, go and work full time, and have full time wages is not the answer, because it is really it stresses out societies. If we say, you know, we have a role model of society where everyone works full time from the age of 21 to the age of 67 or something, that would not be the ideal society which we are aspiring to. But what we need is to have a much more flexible perspective on work, that people, you know, you work part time, you work full time, and you move from one stage to the other depending on your living arrangements. But during the entire time, you need to have an insurance system that provides you with some benefits, that it makes clear, you know, once you retire, you have a pension that you can live off, and while you are at work, you're insured in a way, either through unemployment and health insurance, that you do not run the risk to really go bankrupt if something happens. I think that is the kind of model we need. And the gig economy and the platform economy is only one part of it, and it is a small part of this bigger picture.
Yes, I agree completely. Even traditional economy, you have a lot of part-time and temporary jobs, and the goal shouldn't be to turn those into full-time jobs, because as I said, the full-time jobs are disappearing, and I don't see that they're going to come back. The goal should be to figure out how to make those part-time and temporary jobs into good jobs, where they're fully supported, let them have the flexibility and the security, both, instead of one or the other, which is how it is for many workers now. And by doing that, you really will unleash the genius of the German workers. They won't be stuck in a full-time job they don't like, because that provides a retirement and the security that they want. And if they go to a freelancer job, they won't have it. They'll be free to go to where they need to and really, you know, fulfill their potential. Yeah.
Stephen, let's yeah. bring Anna in again, because the lady to the left, she asked. She quite obviously she stated that. The question we're talking about is obviously about labor and social issues, but also about other issues, right? So what other issues is it about? And then bringing it back to labor and social issues. What is interesting in Germany is that you have some kind of basic agreement between, let's say, the capital and the labor side, that it's in the common interest of the society to have high-quality jobs, right? And you're saying that in your business model, there is part of the startup world which is interested in high-quality jobs. And then, as Anke said, we have to differentiate, right? There are some kind of startup business models that are based on churning high-quality jobs into low-quality jobs. And then there's business models like yours. So do we actually need some kind of, let's say, social movement within the startup scene saying that we are actually standing in for this kind of model of a society which is based upon high-quality jobs? And shouldn't these startups, so to say, distance themselves more from those actually employing a model which is based upon low-quality jobs? But first about the labor and not labor and social issues.
Okay, so I actually agree with Anke that part-time jobs is not the problem, but rather the solution. And I must say, like from our side, for example, we have quite some workers who are working part-time who at some point in their career have the wish to have 1 or 2 days off per week and doing other things, taking care either of their children or doing some more creative things or things that they always wanted to do. And we are completely open for all kind of actually flexible working models. And I think, like coming back as well to the man-woman question, and while there are so many women among the part-time jobs, I think what needs to change, and what is actually rather our problem, is that at least in Germany, I don't know how it is in the US, it is actually not possible to be part-time and still be a leader, so still lead a team. And this is something that we need to rethink completely in society, because I actually think that part-time workers can be leading a team perfectly. So because they are not there all the time, they need to build up a great team behind them, they need to be very precise in what they want, they need to have a very motivated team, and so on and so forth. So great circumstances, actually, to being a good leader and still working part-time. But this is very, very rare, and I think we need to see this coming actually over the next years to solve this, and to as well solve the female man ratio in that topic.
Anke, do you think this could be some kind of a Standort Vorteil? So to say, the USP of Germany, which could be a place where you can actually combine work-life balance, all this kind of models you've just been talking about, with a very dynamic, flourishing, innovative, technology-based ecosystem. So could this be like what makes Germany special as opposed to the US, for example?
You mean the working time arrangement? Or
yeah, coming to Germany, starting a startup here, or starting to work for a startup in Germany, this will mean that you can have both, right? You can have the Scandinavian way of living and the Silicon Valley style of innovativeness and dynamism.
Okay, between Scandinavia and Silicon Valley, you know, Germany is a third model, and the third model is actually conservative. If you say Scandinavian is a social democratic way of life, and then you have the Anglo-Saxon way of life. But, you know, I wouldn't be too over-optimistic about, the part-time, full-time men, women situation, because it is an expression of a conservative lifestyle. And we still do have a, you know, conservative traditional role for women who work part-time. So I'm not absolutely, you know, over-enthusiastic about it, but I would agree that when we want to achieve gender equality, we need to be much more flexible in the way we work, and we need to be much more flexible and open towards part-time leadership and part-time roles which can go up to the top. I completely agree with that, and we need to be more flexible about that. To the question, is that do we have something to offer here? I think what we do have to what we can offer is actually a better working time arrangement. We have one of the lowest working hours per year. You know, Germany is, if you look at the statistics of the OECD, working hours in Germany are relatively short, and that is not just to do with part time, but it is also full time workers work relatively shorter working hours, you know, in many areas. And that, by definition, you could say, you know, that enables much more work-life balance than if you have live in a society where working hours are extremely long. And that often has to do with the gig economy, often has to do with freelancing, etc., where you find overly long working hours. So the picture would be mixed, I would say.
Yeah, let's take the question over here.
Hello, my name is Andrea Schneider-Dörr. I'm a lawyer and I'm a PhD candidate and I'm working on legal standards for crowd work. And thank you so much for your discussion. And my question is, so in Germany we have a strong connection between social security and employees. It's strongly connected to this status. So is it something we can hold for the future? And if not, what is the way of getting things done? It is changing the terms of who is an employee or changing the terms of what is social security for the future?
That's a very good question. We have a similar debates in the United States about there's a discussion about changing the definition of what is an employee. Because once you're defined that way, a whole bunch of legal ramifications kick into effect. And there's a talk in the United States about creating a third category of employee, because we have regular employees, we have independent contractors, which is like you're solo self-employed, and now there's talk of creating a third category called dependent contractors. I'm not a big fan of this approach, because what usually happens is, like for Uber, there's lawsuits against them because the drivers say, we're actually your employee. Uber says, no, you're contractors. You're the CEO of your own driving business. And so they aren't responsible for any of the social security and labor protections, nothing. And so you could create another category, but then the lawyers for Uber just go to work at finding the loopholes in the new category. My approach is more, let's create, as I said, good jobs out of part-time jobs. Have all types of jobs, no matter how you're working. If you're an Uber driver, Uber still is responsible, as is the driver, for some degree of your social security costs. Every business would have to be responsible for any employee they hire, no matter how many hours, what the conditions are. And by doing that, you get past the loopholes, you get past the lawyers, because no one is out of the system. There's no in and out. There's no labor market insiders, labor market outsiders. Everybody is covered to some extent. That, to me, is the better way. And the way for the future, as we get more into the digital economy and more into automation, algorithms, robots, things that are going to be replacing humans, we have to be really clear in covering the people that do have jobs so that they aren't even more labor market outsiders than they are now. And I think that's a real danger.
Anna, do you think this is feasible? So have some kind of like pooled contributions? So you're going to have freelance work, but you're going to have pooled contributions.
Hard for me to say. I mean, I'm so in a certain point, I'm missing kind of in this whole discussion actually two views on this whole situation, and the one is the view of the customer, and the other one is the view of the employer who really wants to be flexible and who really maybe does not want to work full time and who wants to have a life. And we see so many people who so highly value the flexibility that we have, that it's actually not like coming from like the evil companies who are not offering full-time secure jobs anymore, but it's more what's requested from many, many people today to have the flexibility to move around, to be free to move to other cities, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, of course, as a company, I'm very willing to take responsibilities for the people who are working in our company, but I think you need to as well like not look from it so much from this past world, but really think what the workers want today, or many of them.
Well, so I think that's what we're saying is creating a system where those workers can still be part time, still have the flexibility, go to another part of the country, work for another employer if they want. But by doing that, they're not missing out on Social Security, which so many of the workers, I mean, how many of you have 300 employees, how many of them are regularly employed workers, how many of them are freelancers, what percentage roughly?
Or is that top trade secret and you can't tell us?
No, it's not. So, I mean, so if, out of the 300 people that we employ, 150 are the stylists. So that are the ones who are styling our customers and putting together outfits for our customers. And they are all fixed employed with our company because we want to keep them long-term in the company and we want to offer them a good and safe job, actually. So,
and the other 150 are?
The others are just from the other departments, and most of them are fixed employees. So we only have a handful of freelancers currently, most of them in IT. And most of the freelancers that are working for us in IT, we would love to hire on a fixed contract, but they say, oh, well, no, I very much appreciate to be actually that flexible, and maybe in 6 months I will move to Spain, who knows?
So with so few of them that are freelancers like that, if there was a requirement that you as the employer, okay, you still have to pay something into this freelancer's social security, then it wouldn't be a big cost to you. It's something that could be doable.
Yeah absolutely.
So, final question to Anke. Do you think Stephen's model of a portable social security net is feasible? And would this also be thinkable across the European Union?
Oh, wow. I think the question by the PhD student, do we actually start changing the definition of an employee, mm-hmm. or do we start changing our social security system? That is the crucial question, mm-hmm. because that is where you have to take a decision. Either you declare many more freelancers as employees, either as dependent contractors, or you just declare, if you in such a freelance relationship, we treat you as employees, and therefore we put you into all the social security systems, which are much more costly than what they are doing now. That would be one solution. The other solution is really to open up social security systems to people who are now freelance, and we have to do one or the other, or we have to do both.
Okay. Yeah?
And that is the big question. I would say we have to do both. We have to really change the way we look at employees and dependent contractors and define very clearly what the distinction is. But we also have to do something about social security system, and that is where the portable system comes in. Should we have individual accounts for people who are freelance, who earn some social security rights from being freelance, and if they move to another job or to another contract, they can take their account with them. I think that is, in principle, a good idea. The big question is always, how does that relate to existing social security accounts? Because, is that just part of the old account? Is that a new account? And who pays into that? Because very often, freelancers are attractive because they're cheap, and they're cheap because they don't pay social security contributions.
We have to stop here.
And someone needs to pay for that.
So. Thank you so much. We have to stop here. What we learned this afternoon, that the future of work and making Germany a leader in the digital age is apparently very much about labor and social policy. Thank you all for coming, and thank you three on the stage. Thank you.